Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son. I'm Luke. I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harris.
I'm Adam Pranica.
It's been a long time, Adam, since we opened packages of cards on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Did they make Voyager cards specifically?
You know what? You just did it, man. You just asked if they make Voyager cards, and now Bill Tilly is going to be inundated with Voyager cards.
I feel like the shitty thing about this is that it probably, since we last played Card War on the show, the collectible trading card market has exploded, and I bet they cost a fortune now.
They do. I'm looking at the Star Trek collectible card game Voyager booster box. It's $100.
God damn.
$100.
What about the quotable Star Trek Voyager trading cards?
Oh boy, there are a lot of booster boxes that we don't have. There's a Borgs booster box.
Wow.
There is what looks like just a TNG booster box I'm looking at, which I know we don't have. There's a Trouble with Tribbles booster box.
I feel like there was some, like the rules felt a little different with TNG opening up cards because we both just knew the series back to front.
Yeah. And we were making safe decisions about who was winning every time.
And I've seen all of Voyager, but I don't think you have. And it's been a long time since I've seen all of Voyager. No. So like opening up a card that ruins something would be a real drag.
That's true. It's smart that we're opening cards in the back catalog of the shows we've seen. Ben, one thing that I encountered when I was looking for my collectible cards was my stack of Jaegers.
You actually may be the person that start. I mean, it's now like basketball cards and all different kinds of cards are part of this, but mm-hmm. You may have started the inflation in the trading card industry.
You fucking people on Twitter are like, I don't think the Jaeger bubble's a thing anymore. And then they send me a link to eBay for like a Jaeger that's listed at $10 or something. But let me tell you, random tweeter, you check back in on that Jaeger, it's selling for $69.69, baby.
Nice.
And that's what I saw at the last Jaeger I looked at go for. The Jaeger bubble still exists.
I mean, I would like to see them going a little higher, maybe $420.69, personally.
Can I tell you, like, I was camped out on that card specifically. I was like, well, I haven't bought a Jaeger in a long time. I could add to my giant collection. And as soon as it got to $69.69, I didn't have the heart to bid it up. I wanted it to go for that.
That's noble of you.
Yeah, and it did. And it did.
We were giving them away for a long time.
One at every live show is how we did it.
Yeah.
That was fun.
But you still have quite a hoard. We haven't done that many live shows.
No. Yeah, I always measure from the base. I've got about an inch and a half of Jaegers here.
Wow. That's a prodigious stack there, buddy.
Hey.
Should be proud of that. Well, what I have here are Mirror Mirror expansion packs for Star Trek, the customizable card game. What do you got pack-wise?
I decided to mix it up. So I had wondered if we were going to do best out of three or best out of five. So what I pulled was five packs, just in case.
Okay.
Two rules of acquisition packs, two mirror mirror packs, and the wild card, the Deep Space Nine Memories from the Future sticky pack. You know the cards, the ones that are stuck together for some reason, and could potentially have an autograph card inside.
Oh,
I'm still
baby.
Looking for an autograph.
Yeah, I don't think we've found one of those yet.
I should really switch to all DS9 cards because I really want to get that autograph. But
I would say focus on the DS9 cards. Do you want to go to war, my friend?
I do.
We're at war.
There's been no formal declaration of war.
Maybe this trick will bring us some luck.
That nonsense is centuries behind us.
War! Go to war!
Hey, I'm opening packages. What do you say? Should we get this going?
Oh, they're so stuck together.
Are you going to do that thing where you like flex the cards a little bit to like...
I do. Yeah. Oh, the way we do the card game is we just flip over single cards, right? Like we don't go through the whole pack.
3, 2, 1. Oh boy. I'm starting pretty strong here, buddy.
Oh no.
I have an enhanced attack ship. It's a Jem'Hadar Tik, constructed in the Alpha Quadrant, one of the first Dominion fighter craft upgraded with Breen energy dampening technology in 2375. It's those ones that don't react to phaser fire and whatnot.
I love the Breen. We need more Breen.
Never turn your back on a Breen. A thought hit me the other day that it might be fun in Discovery, now that they're in the deep future, to have some Breen characters and like some of the veil of secrecy has fallen away from the Breen.
The Breen diaspora out in the Delta Quadrant.
Oh, yeah.
Help us learn.
You think there's Breens in the D-Quad?
I don't know. I mean, anything could be in the D-Quad. I think that's the fun of Voyager, right?
That's true. What do you got there?
Ben, I've got, as one of Deep Space Nine's greatest moments, Odo the Killer. This is a picture of Odo, and who looks like Change Leader. Change Leader's having a very bad day.
This is that guy that snuck onto the little D, and he had to kill him, right? And he's like the only changeling that's ever killed another changeling?
Oh, wait. Yeah, I confused this with Change Leader. This isn't Change Leader at all.
You could be forgiven. The guy is very flaky in that shot. It's hard to tell them apart when they look that sick.
Yeah. Yeah, the episode is called The Adversary. Mm. And you're right. Odo has to kill a guy. One of his own. It's a big bummer. I don't know, man. Drag. I think if we've got to decide who wins this card war game, I have a murderer on my card.
Yeah. But I have a ship that does murders on mine. Mine can do murder at scale. And yours, like, has regrets. Mine has no regrets.
Yeah, that's true. Yours is more cold-blooded, so I think I'm gonna give the W to you.
Yes! This feels great.
All right. Ready for round two?
Hit me.
3, 2, 1. Ben, I have got another Odo-specific card. If I keep if I keep drawing Odos, I'm just going to lose. This one's called Shifting Back. I'll show you and the viewers what this card looks like. You may remember this is the one where Odo's got the test tube friend. The test tube founder.
That's his little buddy.
Yeah, the episode's called The Begotten. Yeah. You remember this one, right?
Is that the one where it goes into him and gives him back his shape-shifting powers?
This is the one where we met Dr. Mora.
Oh.
You remember Dr. Mora? Dr. Mora can really do some damage, I think. I wonder if Dr. Mora is stronger than your card, Ben. What do you have over there?
Well, my card is T-Lock. He's a Klingon security guy, served for years as a bodyguard in the House of Duras. Took a position aboard Tarak Nor to escape the unpredictable demands of Mursa and Betor. He's got an integrity of 4, a cunning of 6, and a strength of 9.
You need to have a pretty high stamina to work with Lursa and Betor, I bet.
Yeah. And you also have to be, like, really disciplined in terms of your, like, eye lines, because there's a lot of boob windows you might catch yourself you know, just kind of absentmindedly staring at.
God, Duras was a dope. Is there any wonder that Gowron got the upper hand on him?
All right. Well, I think you win with your guy there.
With my test tube Odo? All right.
Yeah. T-Lock is like a total fucking chump.
Yeah.
From what I can tell.
I gotta say, like, anyone from House Duras, gonna be at a little bit of a disadvantage, I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, he's not even in the family. He works as a bodyguard for the family. Give me a break.
Yeah, that's lame as hell.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Ben, I've got a picture of a corpse on my card.
Mm.
It's Death of Tain.
Inebrin Tain?
You know Inebrin Tain. And you know the episode in Purgatory's Shadow.
Wow.
Where he dies.
Hmm.
He told Garrick that he was proud of him.
Yeah.
In one of his last moments.
And you're like, so wait, is he Garrick's dad? I can't quite remember. I feel like we went back and forth on this a lot.
Tain was a hard man.
Man, I think you may have me beat, because I just have Alliance Nor.
Hmm.
Ore mining and processing station representative of facilities used by the Klingon / Cardassian Alliance. It's like, it's not Terok Nor, it's not Impok Nor, it is a generic space station of that design.
It's generic Nor.
Weak. Very weak.
Ben, I've really come from behind here. It's 2 cards to 1. I guess we are playing to best out of 5.
Yeah, I think we've got to.
Got to do it.
This is make or break for me.
Yeah.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Fuck. I have multi-dimensional transport device.
Oh.
Modifies transporter function to allow beaming to an alternate universe developed in the Mirror Universe, used by Smiley, Professor Sisko, the Intendant, and others to cross over. And you remember this dumb, you know, it's like a,
oh,
it's
yeah,
like a soup thermos with some pipes glued to the outside of it.
Pretty weak, Ben, but I don't know if it's as weak as Prisoner O'Brien from Hard Time, who has been weakened from his decades in prison.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if Prisoner O'Brien can beat anyone, because, I mean, as much as we love the character for his experience there, let's just, like, spitball what his attributes would be. Zeros across the board.
Yeah. Drawing diagrams with his finger in the dust.
Yeah. Hunger 10. Strength 0.
Diagrams
sanity
5.
0. Yeah, I think you have me beat there. You have to have me beat. Prisoner O'Brien's not beating anyone.
If you had a key to jump from universe to universe, I suppose you would be pretty powerful relative to a guy wearing rags sitting cross-legged on the floor.
That's what I'm saying.
Sad that he killed his one and only friend.
Yeah. Who may or may not have been real. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that that was an imaginary friend, and we know how difficult they are to kill.
You should be destroyed. You are cruel, uncaring creatures.
Some of the most difficult Star Trek villains of all. Yeah. The imaginary friend kind.
Are you saying we're locked up going into the fifth flip?
Yeah, I've got us at 2-2. Is that the score?
I feel like you're being generous with me, but I'll take it. I could use it.
All right, the fifth and final tie-breaking card is now.
I have a Romulan security officer named Tagus. This guy may be as forgettable as T-Lock.
Oh,
the Klingon security guy. Assigned bodyguard duties in the capital city on Romulus. He has integrity of 5, cunning of 7, and strength of 8.
Those are stronger numerical attributes than I would have expected.
Yeah, he is like numerically a little bit better than T-Lock, but not by much, buddy.
You know what? Everyone gets a trophy in the collectible card game, huh? Ben, I don't know if I have you beat here. What I have is a Greatest Legends card. This looks like a special card.
Wow, I like the construction of the name.
Yeah, it is for Jadzia Dax and Ezri Dax. There's a fair bit of foil on this card.
What?
But let me tell you something. On the front of the card, like, this card is for Jadzia and Ezri.
Yeah.
Front of the card, Sisko and Jadzia Dax
Weird.
Look at what they do to Ezri.
She's in black and white on the back?
With like a bunch of like static and shit over her face.
What the hell?
I don't like what this card does to Ezri. I don't think it's cool at all.
Yeah.
It may be a special card, but this is not special to me.
Hmm.
God, I don't know, Ben.
Do you want to call it a redo and flip another pair of cards over so we have something definitive?
All right. This got to be definitive. It's so important to be definitive. 3, 2, 1.
Okay. I have an interrupt card here. It says, I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer. Despite his protestations to Captain Kirk, Dr. McCoy treated a grievously wounded Horta. Thermal concrete from the supplies of the Starship Enterprise made an excellent wound covering.
Sounds pretty great, but is it as powerful as the moment you've confessed your love to a person that you've had a crush on forever, Ben? My card is Odo's Confession.
Whoa.
You'll remember
the
episode.
Is it his confession to Kira in the Rock?
You'll remember Heart of Stone.
That wasn't really Kira, that was Change Leader.
Odo's like, welcome to the Rock. I used to be a prisoner here.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought I was the clear winner until you started poking holes in the idea of this not being real Kira.
It wasn't real Kira, but it was a brave act of vulnerability on Odo's part to make the tearful confession of love.
How much bravery is on your card?
Very little. Bones, not a brave man.
I think we have our winner, folks.
Wow.
I'm ready to call it.
Well, congratulations, Adam.
3 Odos to 2.
We focused at the beginning of our show here on war, but maybe we should focus on forging a path to peace, Adam. Should we get into the episode we came to talk about today?
Nicely pivoted, Ben. Let's get out of all of this fighting and into some peace with Voyager Season 2, Episode 14. Alliances.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
We're getting sucker punched by the Kazon at the beginning of this episode.
All episodes should start like this. Just the Voyager taking bangers from Kazon ships, and we know it's bad because it's the return of Big Earn from Kingpin here.
Big Earn. Long time.
For Captain Janeway. She's really getting rocked personally.
They take out one of the Kazon ships, I think, but the ship is really fucked up. By the time the Kazon bug out, Voyager has no engines, no nothing. It's still an emergency after the battle is over, and that's because the ship is basically unable to defend itself or move.
Ben, I feel like I learn a new word from you every episode. I think many friends of DeSoto can say the same. You're a man of many words, many $10 words even. I've got to tell you, this episode made me feel foolish right up top. Because
really?
There was a line of dialogue here.
So much did I see coming, cocky!
BLT's in engineering and she's like,
but I've got a lot of casualties down here. I've got to tend to first.
And I'm like, oh my God, there's like 150 people on this ship. This is bad. And then Chakotay on the bridge, casualties on all decks. No fatalities so far. What?
Right.
And I actually paused the episode and I was like, I played it back with the subtitles. I was like, did they say that right? I couldn't figure it out. I was like, casualties and fatalities are the same, right? Wrong.
Wow.
They aren't the same. I looked up those two words and you can be a casualty without dying. It just means you can't perform the duties of your job.
Today's secret word is
casualties.
You all remember what to do whenever anyone says a secret word, right?
Scream!
Right!
Yeah, so it's like an umbrella catch-all for dead or too injured to keep helping.
I feel like that is very confusing in a shipwide emergency context.
I guess it provides you context for how many working bodies you've got
to
throw at a problem.
You know what? Maybe it is better to have that distinguished that way. But anyway, I had never heard those two words in that proximity, in that context before. If I got nothing else from this episode, and I really didn't learn much from this episode at all, that is what I will take away from it.
Speaking of casualties... there's a guy that is really badly injured on the floor in engineering. They say his console blew up right in his face.
Midshipman, you're a tiger.
Got a face full of computer. They want to beam him straight to six bay, but they don't have transporters, right?
BLT comes so close to just gathering him up in her arms and taking him straight to the bridge. She's like, no, I can't do that. That's
like, this isn't my nephew. This is just some guy.
I'm not here to prove some sort of weird point to my captain. I actually need this guy. We can't replace him.
I thought it was interesting because, I mean, we're referencing Scotty's nephew in Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. This guy stayed at his panels when the others fled.
But that guy was like mutilated. Like his face was a pile of hamburger meat, and Kurt, the too badly injured guy on Voyager, has like a little bit of charcoal rubbed into his face. He does not look that injured.
He's a jar of Noxzema away from going to the school dance, I think.
Yeah, so he dies on the slab in Six Bay, and it's one of those like it never gets any easier scenes. B'Elanna is very upset because this is a dude that saved her life one time. And this is pretty upsetting. And Chakotay is like reporting into the captain. Like basically anything important on the ship is broken and now they've lost one of their crewmates. And this was one of the Maquis crewmates.
They're down a crew person and down a torpedo. And that's one of the hardest parts of this whole thing to swallow, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. The captain's really broken up about that torpedo. But Chakotay starts to advocate for going full Maquis in this scene.
And if you want to keep doing it the Maquis way, that's fine with me.
I like it a lot. On TNG, we used to get a lot of permission to speak freely, go ahead kind of conversations. But I feel like Chakotay and Janeway have the relationship to skip past that piece of dialogue every time.
Yeah. It was always very pro forma when it was Riker and Picard.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But yeah, Chakotay definitely, especially when they are in private, feels empowered to just speak freely whenever he wants.
I like this. And Chakotay really stands up for his reasoning here. His reasons are they've been getting their asses handed to them so often that maybe it's time to form, God, what's the word? Oh, it's the title of the episode. Form an alliance, maybe.
Yeah.
With one of these factions that are kicking their ass all the time. And then he doesn't stick around for her response. It's like an in-person hang-up on her.
Yeah, it's like, think about it. And then he like storms out.
I love that.
Her reaction to this is extremely negative, extremely fast. And I felt like maybe one thing I would do if I had the power to rewrite this episode a little bit is explain why she is so against that earlier in the episode. Because I feel like it is a later McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
When she really articulates what her beef is.
Right. It doesn't make her look good in this moment.
She's like, make peace with the people that we hate. Fuck that.
No!
And that feels very un-Starfleet without some like contextual information.
Yeah, you're right. And it does get fixed later with that later context. But in the moment here, not a great look.
No.
Not a great look to theme. After the break, we learn that funerals are held in the mess hall.
Yeah.
Which has got to be a super fucking bummer if you're on shift and it's break time and it's time to go get a little bit of chow.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed crewman Kurt Bandera's recorded hollow message to all 150 members of the Voyager crew, though. All the things he'd learned from them, all of the like reductive observations about their characters.
Yeah.
Tuvok, so logical, yet so fearsome. B'Elanna cannot govern her temper, but is a brilliant engineer.
And you, the panel that ended up taking my life. Fuck you, panel.
I'll see you in hell.
The purpose of this gathering confuses me.
Chakotay putting together a nice little streak of good episodes here. This is a damn fine eulogy that Chakotay gives. And Ben, I want to be clear with you. It's actually exactly the story that I want you to say about me if I were to die before you verbatim. Just print this out. This is what I want you to say. Replace Bandera with me. And then that's it.
A lot of us can say we're alive today because of
Adam Pranica.
There was never a better man to have at your side. Never anyone more willing to take on the tough jobs.
My family and friends won't get it, but the FODs will really appreciate it.
I'm pretty sure you'll die before I do, so.
Yeah, no question. I am much, much older than you.
You are. But you also take better care of yourself than I do. I think it's just going to be like a freak accident or something.
I'm just a widowmaker away from ending the show prematurely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, man. Then I'd have to cast a replacement.
Could you imagine hiring a producer and a co-host? God, that's rough. That is
a lot of resumes to go through.
Yeah.
I mean, you thought we got a lot of resumes when we made a call for people to apply to be producers on the show.
Yeah, I did.
You would not believe how many people.
You know what would be hilarious is if compared to the number of resumes we got for producer, you got like 2 for co-host. No one wants to co-host. Not after what happened to Adam.
Yeah, yeah. They saw what the show did to him.
Yeah. Yeah. After the service, a couple of Makeys confront Janeway, like in that way, what are you going to do about this, Captain? Mm-hmm. Bandera was our bud, and it kind of feels like he died for nothing, and maybe you killed him? Like, it gets really hostile really fast. To the extent that the Makeys behind this other Makeys that's yelling at Janeway is kind of holding him back.
Yeah.
But there's a suggestion that there might be something more here between these two Makeys. Did you get this vibe? Like, we've seen people hold other people back in a fight. At least I have. Right. But I rarely see rubbing of the shoulder with the thumb by the guy.
Yeah,
I thought maybe these guys might have been in a relationship.
I don't dislike your read. I mean, the guy that puts the hand on the shoulder becomes kind of more interesting later in the episode.
Yeah.
But all we have to go on here now is that it almost seems like he's trying to convince Hogan not to strike the captain.
Yeah.
Like, Hogan, real cranky that they haven't made an arrangement, an alliance, if you will, with the Kazon yet.
Janeway, after having just seen Star Trek First Contact recently, is all about blowing up the ship as a first course of action rather than doing anything else in any conflict.
And Picard really was up his own ass trying to not blow up the damn ship.
Yeah. Yeah. She takes great umbrage with Hogan's suggestion of this, of trading tech for peace. No way.
I'll destroy this ship before I turn any part of it over to the Kazon.
Like, I guess this starts to shed light on what her logic is. Like, the assumption being that an alliance with the Kazon would necessarily cost equipment,
yeah,
would cost technology.
Yeah.
But yeah, she shuts these guys down and walks out and kind of snipes at Chakotay on her way out. You want to run this ship like a Makeys ship? That's what it's going to look like, buddy.
They've come to Kazagar heads a couple of times already. And no one has won the argument yet. And I like that because sometimes you get Star Trek conflicts that are like tied up neatly after the very first time you disagree. And I like that this one is sort of a protracted scene of disagreement and then a different scene and then a different scene. And then we're back to this disagreement being re-adjudicated. Like, I like this.
I do too. And I like that part of the conflict is that the lower rank Makeys are just like stuck on this ship and didn't agree to anything.
Yeah.
And so fighting and possibly dying for the mission that the captain sets out is a tougher pill for them to swallow than the captain assumes it should be.
It sucks. It really sucks for them.
You may be willing to die for Federation principles, but they're not.
So Janeway visits Tuvok's quarters after this, and she tells Tuvok this crazy thing that Chakotay has suggested. And Tuvok puts in a VHS tape of Star Trek VI to prove his point.
He's like, I was around back in this era, and I'm one of the people that thought that the Klingons were going to become the alien trash of the galaxy.
Yeah.
I flip-flopped on the alien trash of the galaxy issue.
Yeah. The bumper sticker on his shuttle was I voted for Cartwright.
It's a very interesting moment because he's basically saying, like, this is a belief I had and I didn't think that the Klingons could be reasoned with. I didn't think that they were an adversary that mm-hmm. we could form a quote-unquote alliance with. But Khitmer proved everything I thought was wrong. I mean, this scene actually made me think of the Kazon in a new way, which is that the Romulans are the chess-playing species and the Vulcans are the logic species and the Klingons are the warrior species. Maybe the Kazon are the opportunistic species.
Well, I will absolutely agree with you that this episode changed my feelings about the Kazon, but it doesn't happen right now. I'll tell you that much. It happens a little later for me. At the end of this scene, though, Tuvok does tell Captain Janeway that maybe our situation is more like this flower. See how I have grafted this sharp, craggy pine cone onto this smooth, sweet honeydew. This could be us, but you're playing.
At first, I grafted these two plants together and they were sickly, and it was a real Bay Got Me Like situation. And now.
So we cut to a McLaughlin group.
Issue 2.
Big announcement. We're now pro-alliance.
We're going to take a run at abandoning our principles.
I love this scene. Neelix knows a guy who might be able to make a good sounding board. Neelix is like, look, Cap, I'm not going to be closed-minded about this, but you might want to do a little bit of focus grouping, W/R/T alliance. And I know a planet full of people like that basically live behind a two-way mirror. We can get him in there, give him some snacks, maybe a gift certificate to a market nearby in exchange for their opinions.
One of those knobs where you turn it to the left and right to show whether you like or don't like something.
Yeah. This contact he's got is on the chickpea mining planet of Sobra. And before Janeway is able to fully grasp this idea, Kim like comes out of his seat and starts talking shit about this idea, joking that Seska would make a better ally than the Kazon.
They're like, hey, not a terrible idea, Kim.
BLT is like, yes! Which is a comment that swings the ball-kicking machine so hard at Chakotay, it basically dislocates his balls on the spot. Chakotay's like, please don't. Is there anything I can say to convince you to leave Seska out of this?
Yeah. And they're like, you know, she does still have her Starfleet health insurance, so she is due to see the doctor for a prenatal checkup pretty soon. Oh, and he's like, come on, really?
Poor Chakotay's like, all right, well, if it is to contact Seska, it's up to me. And Janeway's like, fuck that. I think you're a little too close after the beating you took over there in more ways than one. And so Janeway has decided to contact her herself.
So they're going to cultivate multiple potential allies within the various warring sects of the Kazon.
Makes sense.
And, they're going to split up, and Neelix is off to this planet. Meanwhile, Janeway is getting on the FaceTime with Seska and her boyfriend, Kulla, who doesn't understand that Seska's in charge.
I love how distracting Seska is just generally because of what she did. And I think there's an instrumentality to how these scenes are in sequence. Because the moment I was like, they didn't just give Neelix a shuttle to drive by himself, right? Where the jangly keys of Seska appear on the screen and I'm like, oh, Seska. Like, I stopped thinking of Neelix alone on a shuttle altogether.
Well, crucially, Neelix still has his own ship. And we never see it, but...
But he didn't take his own ship, did he?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought he took a shuttle.
Oh, I thought when they went and looked for him, they were like, we don't see any signs of his ship in the
You know, that makes perfect sense then as to why it wasn't a bigger deal.
Yeah, is this the end of Neelix's shuttle? Do they lose it in this episode?
God, maybe.
Well, anyways, Kulla and Seska agree to meet. They want to determine the location of the meeting, so that's where Voyager is off to. Meanwhile, we go to this planet that Neelix is visiting, and we go to, like, Kazon Bada Bing, where Neelix meets, like, the dorkiest guy in the strip club.
There's a planet where instead of people, they got bears.
Yeah, but our planet's got bears.
Yeah, but on this planet, the bears are the people.
The guy that is doing a puzzle in a strip club.
Keep dancing. Why are you stopping dancing?
This is worse than buy me a drink. The stripper is like, do this sex puzzle.
It's like not even, it's a math problem or something.
Hey, also, Jal Dursa, the action's behind you. Maybe do the puzzle while you still have a view of the stage, weirdo. Yeah.
The dancer is really upstaging him, and he just wants to be facing the camera, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So Neelix doesn't get very far with Jal Dursa before two Kazon thugs kind of drag Neelix away.
Yeah, these guys kind of read as cops to me, which I didn't realize the Kazon were like organized enough to have like uniformed police officers, but these guys kind of felt that way.
Yeah.
Neelix is in big trouble, but we don't get to find out what for because we are in another McLaughlin group.
Issue 3.
On the Voyager, where Culla and Seska are now meeting with Janeway and Tuvok.
Well, I've got to get that platinum, get that
lobe enlargement.
Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that, and more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and backyards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right?
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
I've got to get that
platinum.
What not?
Are you planning a heist?
Go. This is one of those fun negotiations that gets out of control really fast, right? Because Culla hears Janeway out, and the proposal is for help. Help of the kind that goes like, look, if there's a Kazon Nistrum ship in distress or under attack or whatever, we'll totally pull off and help. Like, we'll be diplomatically cool, but we're not going to give you any tech. And Culla's counterproposal is, how about like we exchange a bunch of crew then? And Seska is like, you're not supposed to say that right now. That was supposed to be like other stuff we include later.
Yeah, yeah.
And Culla gets super awful about Seska again. And this is like a character thing with him. He cannot deal with Seska. It's not just that Seska's got ideas, it's that Seska's a lady.
Yeah. He then like stops even dealing with the captain. He like he starts treating Tuvok like the buck stops with him. Tuvok does not let this fly.
Yeah.
Negotiations completely fall apart, and they show Culla and Seska the door.
Yeah.
And we catch up with Neelix, who is being brought to the Star Trek caves, which are now a maximum security prison.
There is no stockade, no guard tower, no electronic frontier.
It's amazing how much better the Star Trek caves look with a little bit of root material.
Yeah.
Nice job.
I mean, I think they can't do the root material every single time because it's got to be like, they got to make us believe that these are different caves.
Right. Right. Roots are more of a special event.
Yeah. But yeah, they push them into one of the chambers in these caves and it's full of refugees. And these are the Trabe. And Neelix meets Mabus, who is their leader. It was really weird watching this because Neelix has this like gash on his forehead. And I watched this morning after being like super worried last night because my mom was in the emergency room. She like,
oh shit.
She like fell over on a super uneven piece of pavement and hit her head on the sidewalk.
Oh God.
He has like the same cut that my mom had yesterday.
Yikes.
It's very weird. She's fine, by the way.
Yeah. You gotta tell us the end part.
Yeah, she had a CAT scan, clean bill of health. It was just a scare, but
God, we really are at the age where our parents just start fucking falling down.
I know.
Jesus.
My dad said that she had a book about how to not fall over so much. Because he like called me to tell me she was in the hospital and I was like, what the fuck? And he was like, yeah, and it's weird because she has this book about not falling over so much. I guess she hasn't gotten to the chapter about not falling over so much.
Is that seriously what he said? Yeah. Your dad's fucking hilarious. That was great.
I guess Neelix has it either because he's got the same gash. And
hey, like your mom should really one-star review that book, by the way. Did not work as advertised.
Extremely disappointed with the efficacy of product.
Mabus has loaf that looks like the Houston Texans helmet logo. I could not get over how much it looked like a bull. Like a bull with horns.
I wondered if it was meant to somewhat evoke Kazon. Like if they're supposed to be like, maybe like branched from a similar part of the evolutionary tree on their planet.
I tried to cop that later when they're all in the room together and they just didn't, it didn't look that way to me.
Yeah. They don't have that like keloid looking head ridge that the Kazons have. So it's hard to tell, but
Mabus tells Neelix that their situation is desperate enough to where like, we kind of need your help. They keep on killing us down here and we want to escape. Are you in?
It's not a very well-guarded prison, and Mabus has good news that there like is probably help coming.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked down at the like playhead on this episode at this point, and I was like, man, this episode is just going so badly for the Voyager crew. Both alliances that they tried to strike are a complete strikeout.
Yeah.
Their ship is totally shredded. Now Neelix is in prison with these guys. This is a real disaster. This whole situation is a disaster.
There is such interesting stuff happening at the end of this episode. I just want to take a slider and pull the end parts further into the middle.
Yeah, because it takes them so long to get to it.
Well, this is one of those parts I feel like could use a little bit more bulk because I never felt in danger in the caves with Mabus and Neelix, and I think we just needed to see someone executed, or there needed to be blood and hair on the walls or something, because I just never felt threatened down here. And by the time we get to the prison escape, like so much of that happens off screen that, I don't know, we needed something else there to heighten the tension.
If a Kazon had come in and like made Neelix fight one of the other guys to the death for his amusement or whatever.
Choose your pain.
That's like Star Trek law.
Yeah.
Voyager can't pick up Neelix at their designated meeting place. And because they know Neelix, they're like, all right, I guess we're going to wait the commensurate 2 hours that that one tends to wait for Neelix to show up or do anything or whatever.
And Harry Kim is just back at his station, like looking at his watch, like thinking about the 75 years they still have of travel, and is like, 2 hours, really? Come on!
God, you know, it's like compounding interest, right? Like all these 2 hour increments really add up.
He's like, I know we have the Delaney sisters here, but back in the Alpha Quadrant, we've got the Duras sisters. I've got work to do, Captain.
We use this 2 hours for conflict, though, because when we cut over to engineering, Hogan has hit up BLT for news about how the Seska meeting went. And BLT is like, stop trying to make Seska happen. It's not going to happen. Chill the fuck out. And it's a conflict between them that doesn't end cleanly. You get the sense that Hogan is stewing on this. And BLT is unhappy for having had to answer for it.
She doesn't like to answer these questions, and she doesn't like the stank that Hogan puts on the word captain when he says it is incredibly disdainful.
Or do you agree with our captain that holding onto our technology is worth dying for?
Nor does Jonas, who has overheard the argument. And what I like about this scene the most, maybe, is the math of it, right? There's one BLT, but now there is a growing number of unhappy engineers working around her, and that is a level of threat that feels greater than what's happening in the caves right now.
Yeah, and I think Jonas does a great job of just doing this all with his face. You can really feel what he's going through and even sympathize with him to a certain extent,
right?
Because of what he is overhearing.
Back on Sobra, Mabus really tries to make us believe that things are dangerous down there by like describing it as a suicide mission. And this prison escape is accomplished primarily off screen. We see one guard, but what we do is we hear things happening around the corner, phaser blasts and such. And then we see like a little dog toy ball explode at the one guard's feet that we meet. And then they're out of there. It feels extremely low stakes.
It really does. And I think that one thing that would have made this better if Neelix had felt at all consequential in the escape, like if he had judo chopped one of the guards.
Or if he had to do something uncomfortable related to his own sense of morality, like anything.
Neelix Dufresne, who crawled through a river of crabe and Kazon shit, came out smelling clean on the other side.
Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
The Voyager is like sick of waiting, and they head to the planet that Neelix was supposed to go to. And instead of Neelix, they find an armada of Kazon ships. This is really freaky.
No one expects the Kazon armada. And no one expects to see Neelix and Mabus on screen when they FaceTime them. These aren't Kazon ships that they're confronted with. They've been trabe the whole time.
They've been trabe the entire time. And it turns out that all of those Kazon ships are actually stolen trabe ships. Everything that the Kazon have, they stole from the trabe, according to Neelix. Yeah. But then we get a little explanation from Mabus that gives a little bit of a complicating spin on that story, which is that the Trabe were the kind of supremacist species that subjugated the Kazon. They were essentially enslaved by the Trabe. So it's not so much that they stole that stuff, is that they probably built all those ships themselves and were not compensated for them.
Yikes is all I can say about this scene. And double yikes later on when Janeway's like, I think these are the types of people that we can work with on an alliance.
I mean, he puts on a good show of feeling bad about it. Like he is.
It is right to feel bad for enslaving a people.
Yeah. He's not like the defensive right wing freak that's like, who cares what happened in Tulsa? That didn't happen during my lifetime. Why should I, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Mabus does not want to teach critical Kazon theory in schools were they to find a planet to settle. And I just don't know if I agree about that. That seems like some historical erasure.
His primary goal is finding a world to settle. Like, he's like telling this sob story of like, yeah, we did this like slavery thing and then they threw off the shackles And now we're the alien trash of the galaxy. Look at us.
The trash is on the other foot now.
And yeah, like they're looking for their forever home. They want to settle down on a planet. And every time they try and put down root somewhere, Kazon come, you know, blow their shit up and force them to flee. And so they're like scattered and in disarray and have no stability. And he says, like, listen, like, we've got an armada here. We can help you and you can help us.
I think this is a moment and an episode that depends on casting this character, the Mabus character, because mm-hmm. the performance here makes me a believer. Like, Mabus and his people did horrible things, but the way he is with Janeway reminded me so much of Riker's dad, in the sense that he was so casual with Janeway and willing to listen and tell and be a diplomat and be self-aware about his own mistakes and whatever. Like, it felt right. like Mabus was seducing Janeway. And it, I mean, it turns out in his own way he was, but his seduction of her diplomatically is really well done.
I totally agree. And like, the way you get to Janeway's heart is say that like, what we want is peace and stability overall.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kind of gets her off the hook with her, my Starfleet morals preclude this
mm-hmm.
issue, which yeah. is that if they come to this negotiating table almost as like the brokers of peace between the Trabe and the Kazon, then it's Starfleet doing Starfleet shit and not the Voyager unfairly rebalancing the power in the Delta Quadrant to make their lives slightly easier.
Right. So Jonas wasn't just eavesdropping on engineering and stewing about what he heard. He's now making moves. He's put a couple of quarters in the phone booth and has made a private call to Seska's personal secretary. And this guy, I love this guy. He's like, I really don't get at this point the relative value of what you're offering here, but I'll go ahead and give Seska your message. Why don't you call back tomorrow? Which I love. I love the idea of Jonas going off on this limb and not getting satisfaction right away. Like,
yeah,
that's dangerous stuff right there. He's out on his limb.
He's really got to be tossing and turning in his bunk bed
yeah.
that night, right?
Will you let me talk to Seska?
Not without some proof you can be trusted.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting scene. Like, it also, it happens right on the heels of, like, at the end of the previous scene, we feel, like, pretty optimistic. Like, oh, maybe there is actually a way for the Voyager to be safe in the D-Quad
yeah.
and even do some good. But this guy doesn't know anything about that. He's already made his mind up.
So, in Six Bay, the Traber being patched up and healed from their time in captivity, and afterward, Mabus and Captain Janeway talk about an alliance. He's game, but he wants to involve all Kazon everywhere as a part yeah. of the negotiation.
Yeah, so what they are going to ask for is basically a home world for the Trabe that the Kazon will leave be.
On paper, this is like catnip to Janeway. She's like, oh, like, this isn't just an alliance. This is a chance for peace among yeah. all these assholes. Why not try for it?
Right. And if it's not a flawless, lasting peace, it will at least give stability to the quadrant for a while.
Think of all you could do with 18 months of clean streets.
That stability could be infectious. You know, it could be like something that they don't want to give up at the end of a brief experience with it. So there's a lot going for this idea.
There's coffee in our alliance.
But we gotta remember we've got two mustache twirling villains in play here, and so we go to Kulla's ship, where he is in the conniving room with Seska.
You let Voyager slip away right into the hands of the Trabe.
They had an opportunity to be the first people at the table before, and now they realize they've blown it.
I could not let the negotiations be dictated by that woman.
I love this moment, because like, you can't have a plan for universal peace and not have invited Kulla and Seska to the table.
Yeah.
And they're pissed off about their mistakes up until now, and now they're pissed off about maybe not being invited to this party.
Yeah, and they're pissed off at each other. Like Seska thinks that the whole crew exchange program that Kulla was suggesting was like absolutely idiotic.
Kulla's like, look, you're pregnant. Maybe you should just stay home. I mean, If we go to this party together, I'll just be doting on you the whole time. It won't be fun for either of us. Like, I'll just go by myself. I'll socialize with all of our friends and coworkers. It's probably better this way, right?
Yeah.
And Seska's like, fuck that. We're both going to go. And in so doing, we will assess the Trabe's weaknesses in order to destroy them.
Yeah. Kula seems pretty sad, but Seska is always like seeing the opportunity in every twist.
Yeah.
Our course is locked in.
Do it. Listen to me very carefully, because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
They have to decide on a site to have this conference. Kittimer is really far away, so they're gonna do it somewhere else. I'm pretty sure that they must have shot a pot full of mashed potatoes at some point in here, because there are so many story beats taken from Undiscovered Country at this point.
Yeah, it's really true. There's a wobbly triangular table in there that seems a little suspicious. Pay no attention to the wobbly table, says Tursa, who is unusually interested in all things triangular table in this scene. Yeah. It's very distracting.
So everybody comes in. This is happening on Sobras, and they they have all the Majas from the different Kazon sects come in like they're fucking candidates in a Republican primary debate.
I love the drama of the entrances. Yeah. I think it's fun.
I think it's fun too, but it's even more fun to think about the anteroom that they were all waiting around in together.
Yeah.
And like the busybody with the headset and the clipboard that was like, okay, now Maj, you're going in, and then Maj, two, you're going in.
I've been wanting a scene like this for a while that lines them all up. Show me all the Kazon so I can get their differences. And I got to tell you, Ben, I am Kazon Oglamar big time.
Yeah.
All those colors, really, really vibrancy to the patterns and tones there.
Yeah. Guy's got a lot of drip on him. Do the Kazon Ogla and the Kazon Oglamar, is the Oglamar like a merger of the Ogla and the Mar? What happened there? Did I miss something?
I don't know. All I know is that they are the best dressed Kazon at this meeting. And I think that counts for something.
In the lead up to this meeting, they've discussed that like there may be a Kazon element that is there to like trick everyone else. And they're like, okay, like if this meeting is sabotaged, somebody's going to want to leave. And that'll be like, we'll know that that's the bad guy. And as they start to get down to the diplomacy, it turns out that it's actually Mabus that is the tricksy one.
Yeah.
He's the one that was setting everyone up. And Janeway like has enough time to warn everyone to get down. and so they beam out of there with the Trabe delegation. But all of the Kazon are stuck in this room as a ship like comes and hovers in front of the windows and just shoots it up, which I feel like happened in like the sequel to Star Trek 2009.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a very Abrams-esque kind of scene here. My favorite shot of the whole episode was when the crew is being beamed away and Mabus is smiling while beaming, like gleefully.
I love beaming.
At what he's created here.
I really like that. The Voyager loses three more torpedoes in this scene. It shoots them from orbit at this ship, which has really good shields and is not destroyed.
I believe that one of those torpedoes contained Bandera, though.
That wasn't one of the ones that they can't replicate.
I don't know, man. Like, I think that's probably how I want to go out. Like, I want to be like cremated or aquamated or something. Talking a lot about my death this episode.
This is your last will and testament, if I'm not mistaken.
But I think that's just a responsible way to deal with your remains. You know, like, use me in the torpedo. Don't just shoot me out into space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was once a torpedo, and to torpedo I shall return. No casualties to speak of in this craven attack by the Trabe on the Kazon. And when they get back to the Voyager, Mabus is just crowing about how successful this was. This is like, he's like, this is great. This is, we're going to have peace finally. And they're pretty pissed off at him.
Couple of times so far in the series, Janeway gets pissed.
Yeah.
And this is maybe as pissed as she's ever been. She was pissed at those organ harvesters big time. Also in the transporter room, right? I feel like the transporter room is really when she lets it out.
Well, it's got all those foamy sound panels on the walls, so she can really like bark at someone without it disturbing the rest of the ship.
And look at the blocking here. I think this is so interesting that we're shooting down at Janeway in this scene, and usually that is a composition that suggests weakness. But we get Janeway looking up at this guy on the pad and tearing into him. I think that's a very interesting choice there. It's an unusual choice for that moment.
It is an unusual choice, and nothing about that shot suggests weakness to me.
Yeah.
Despite its like common usage for that.
Yeah.
Like she totally overpowers whatever subconscious influence that has on a shot and kicks him off the ship. She calls him an executioner and says, "We're not going to deal with people like you." And he's like, how are you going to survive out here all by yourselves now that you have another enemy?
and you're down one torpedo.
Yeah. And they're like, we just got to get the F out of here as fast as possible. And we end the button on the episode. Another McLaughlin group, Adam.
Issue four.
It's funny, like as strong as a case as we were making for Janeway in the previous scene, I don't feel like this is a strong Janeway episode. And this is a scene that I think supports my theory there. She makes the case for just greater vigilance going forward. And then does that thing that I think poor leaders do, which is like, I think we all learned something here. And that I was right the whole time. She, in her description of Federation values, comes off as a very, the best healthcare plan is the Bible kind of person. And I didn't think she supported her position very well here at all. We're made to ride for her because of how emphatic she is and how believing everyone is at the table. But as a viewer, I didn't buy it. Did you?
She takes the packaging off of the candy bar and looks down at it and says, "Federation ideals, you're my only friend." And then she takes a big bite.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, you may be... have a point about the way she delivers her message here, but I think that this is a conclusion that is well taken. The ideals that prevent them from dealing with an individual Kazon sect are that it would upset the balance of power in the quadrant. It smacks of meddling. It smacks of colonialism in a way that, you know, maybe in the short term advantageous, but is disadvantageous in the long term. And I think that the Trabe are a people who seem to be like primarily focused on short-term benefit at the expense of their long-term safety and stability. Like the Trabe are an object lesson in what having no principles or bad principles will buy you.
Sure, but
Delta Quadrant.
But Ben, they're a specific lesson. And what Janeway is saying here is that alliances are bad because it failed this one time, and I can't get with that at all.
I think she's saying alliances with the Kazon in a context that would betray what we stand for are bad.
Yeah.
And that's what I took from it. But
I think in the way that was described earlier, I think you got to tease out this scene a little more and maybe give it some of the conflict that the scene earlier with Kim and Chakotay talking about maybe reaching out to Seska was so full of.
Yeah.
Like, get more voices involved in this moment. The speechifying of it, I just didn't like how it felt.
I did like that it ended on a shot of Harry Kim just like pumping his fist, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Back in business. Well, did you like the episode overall, Adam?
A lot of interesting things happen, and I thought Mabus was a good bad guy. I appreciated how he was constructed as a character, but this is a very sanctimonious Star Trek episode in a way that, like, it's an episode that wants you to agree with Janeway and assumes that you just will, but it doesn't take the time to underpin her case with as much force as it instead creates chaos around it. Like, Yeah. Like, the things that happened circumstantially on this mission weren't strong enough to make the case that Janeway makes at the end in that conference room. And that's why, like, in the end, I did not like how this episode ended. And I think it kind of tarnished the vibe of the rest of the ep. Lots of good parts in it. Lots of interesting things happening. The Kazon parts may be the most interesting of all. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, not a good look for Janeway. What about you, Ben?
I mean, I think that it worked a little bit better for me than it worked for you, but I do agree that with your point that if this episode had been written a little bit stronger toward Janeway arguing her point in a little bit more of a Lawyer Picard kind of way,
yes,
it would have been more satisfying.
Yeah.
That said, I thought it was a great episode. It's a very unusual kind of conflict that it sets up at the beginning. Like, we are in existential danger and our strategy for stopping it is going and trying to make friends. And like, by the halfway point, that has backfired so spectacularly. It just really does a great job of making them feel alone and isolated in the Delta Quadrant. And their efforts in doing that are starting to really work. I'm really pleased with how season two is going, especially compared to season one, which just felt like every third episode was a nebula that wanted to chomp on the ship, you know.
That's something that I can really agree with. Season two, much better than season one.
Yeah.
I don't think anything could ruin season two. That's what I'm saying.
Wow. Okay. You know, there's a lot of hits in our priority one inbox typically. Do you want to see if anything can ruin our priority one inbox?
Oh, geez. I'm going right over there now.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first P1 is of a promotional nature, and it goes like this. In season six, Captain Picard fell in love with a stellar cartographer. It's reassuring to know that cartographers like me still have jobs in the 24th century, and that we're apparently sexy enough to hook up with Captain Picard in a Jeffries tube. If you want some sexy cartography of your own, go to wallacecartography.com. Whether you're a historian that needs a map of silver mines in colonial Peru,
sexy,
or a geography nerd who wants a nice map to hang on the wall,
sexy,
I've got you covered. Discounts for FODs. Wow. Amazing. So check out wallacecartography.com, WALLACE. cartography.com for professional map making and cartography. Adam, did you know that my grandfather was a cartographer of some renown?
I did not.
Yeah.
I just sort of zone out when you talk about your family.
He designed the map that became the logo for the United Nations.
No way.
Yeah.
Boy, he must have been a very rich person.
Not at all. Not at all. It was kind of stolen from him, from as far as I can tell. Weird, interesting history about how that actually happened. But WallaceCartography.com, check it out. Some really beautiful stuff here.
Ben, our second priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from Bridget, and it is to the LGBT friends of DeSoto. And the message goes like this. In 2009, I was pre-transition, horribly depressed, and in my university room watching Voyager to get through the day. I watched an episode for the first time in years, for episode one of the new season of this pod, and it reminded me how far I have come. Just know, LGBT friends of DeSoto, it does, in fact, get better.
Hell yeah, Bridget.
Yeah.
We're really glad to hear that you're much happier now, having transitioned. That's really great.
Yeah. Congratulations, and I don't know anyone who hasn't had terrible, terrible days in their university dorm room watching Star Trek to feel better. That is,
yeah. That's a real mood.
Yeah. You're among friends here, Bridget.
Yeah, totally. Our final P1 today is from Rob, and it's to Meg. It goes like this. I know you always ask not to get gifts on your birthday, but you know I love giving them. I hope this is an acceptable compromise. I have no idea when you'll listen to this, but happy birthday anyway. Let's have some Kinnar to celebrate.
Nice. Nice job, Rob.
Yeah. It looks like Meg's birthday is in the first week of May, so this is a belated birthday gift, but It's always fun to celebrate someone that you love with some Kinar, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And a P1, the best gift to get someone who does not want a gift.
True. Absolutely. It's a gift for us and them.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to get that gift, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and you can set it up there. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks everyone.
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullying, I don't like threats, and I don't like you.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
The reveal about Mabus is like John Doe at the end of Seven. Like, he had the upper hand the whole time, and we didn't know it. And yeah. He was so gleeful at the end when he beamed away. I can't get that picture of his face out of my mind. Like, very few people smile while beaming. And it struck me in that scene just how unusual it was to see him do that. It drew my eye entirely. And I think that's because they knew when they put that scene together that it would draw your eye because they're very far away from camera.
Yeah, it's maybe the most outre villain thing that he does in the episode because the rest of it is that like...
Yeah.
Like, listen, we just want a like reasonable blah, blah, blah. And he's really pulling strings to like do a terrible thing the entire time.
I thought that was a strong moment for a very interesting character who I hope comes back. I hope this is not the end of Mabus.
Yeah.
Because
kind of a crappy name for that character, I feel like.
I don't like the name. You're right. But he got his balls just fucking kicked in the transporter room. And I'm wondering if he comes back for more. So he's going to be my drunk Shimoda for that. What about you?
My drunk Shimoda is anyone who goes to a strip club and faces away from the stage to work on a puzzle.
Oh, yeah. So Tirsa, the guy playing the sex puzzle, is your Shimoda.
Sex puzzle Tirsa.
Well, all sex is a puzzle to me. So I get it.
Adam... Our next episode is season 2, episode 15, Threshold. Paris makes history by becoming the first person across the transwarp threshold, but could pay for the achievement with his life.
This is a famous episode. I've even heard of this episode. This is where they turn into salamanders. I cannot...
Yeah.
Salamander
alert.
Boy, do I have salamander eggs on my face after saying season 2 was impossibly great and would and would never get bad. Isn't this one of the worst episodes of Voyager or Star Trek ever?
How dare you?
You remember liking this episode? Is that what it is?
I don't know. I just don't want to prejudge it. I want to go in and enjoy the episode and then see how we feel after having watched it.
That's the rule. That's the top line rule of Greatest Gen. Fine.
Right below the top line rule of Greatest Gen is that we throw caution to the wind at the end of every episode. We roll dice to find out how we will be doing the next episode by going to gach.biz/game and playing the game of buttholes. The will of the caretaker.
We don't recline our seats and we roll dice at the game of buttholes, Ben.
Yeah. Our runabout is currently on square 23. There is a banger right in front of us. And it looks like we could also hit a Naked Now bathtub episode on our next if I don't roll true.
Jesus. I can't believe we're in danger of bathtub.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
We could hit bathtub, Adam. So I'm going to roll it. Here I go. All
right.
Oh, my God. I hit the banger.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Oh, no.
I hit the banger, and we are now on square 19.
Going backwards.
Knocked us back.
All right. That rarely happens. It feels like when we hit something crazy, it shoots us way up the board.
Yeah. That's typically what goes down.
Wow. So square 19 is where we're at. Big step back for us.
Big step back. Well, we want to say thank you to everyone who helps us take a big step forward by going to MaximumFun.org/join and supporting the show on a monthly basis. We also really appreciate everyone who just listens and enjoys and tells a friend or loved one about the show. Your recommendations have really helped the show grow. Like, I think the show has grown a lot in the last year.
Yeah,
and,
I think so too.
We really appreciate everyone who's put the word out about it.
I hung out with my wife's sister over the weekend, and she mentioned that she does not listen to the show, but she downloads and subscribes it and has also rated it. And I thought that was just the nicest, coolest thing. So that's how she supports the show, and you can do the same.
That's really sweet. Please thank her on my behalf.
Yeah, she doesn't even listen to the show and she does that. If you're a listener of the show and you haven't rated or reviewed, that stuff really helps.
We got to thank Bill Tilly, our card daddy and the social media director of Uxbridge Shimoda. Today's episode coming at the end of August. We gave Bill the month of August off because he has been just putting in so much work and it seemed like he could use a little break, but he's still getting paid. And that is due to the largesse of the Friends of DeSoto. We really appreciate Bill, and we're excited that he is going to be back in the driver's seat on the @GreatestTrek Twitter and Instagram accounts starting in September.
Yeah, psyched about that. Back on the scene is the Bill Tilly.
Mm-hmm.
The music you're hearing right now has been created by Dark Materia, who gave us just a free pass to use it for anything.
Yeah.
Dark Materia is great. Also great, Adam Ragusea, who constructed the theme and interstitial music for all of The Greatest Generation.
Really appreciate it. The Goose has a great cooking channel on YouTube that you can check out by searching Adam Ragusea. And with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that is much faster than any episode previous. Playing at a 10x speed.
This will be an easy edit then, huh?
Yeah, the scientists didn't think it could be done, but we're going to do it.
Wow. You know what? I could go for a shorter edit, no matter what the cost to my personal health. Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.